Hi, this is Rabbi Eric Levy. I'm pleased to bring to you the 7th and 8th Mishnah of the 5th chapter of Vav Metziah for OU's Shnayim Mishnah program. We explained the ideas that are in this Mishnah before, because we needed them for previous Mishnah, and the essence is as follows. One of two conditions must be met before you could pay somebody for a futures contract. That is, before you give somebody $100 and say, you now have to pay me at some future point $100 of, you have to give me $100 of wheat or whatever commodity. And the Mishnah says, in poskan ala peirot ad sheyetzei ashar. You can't do this. You're not allowed to create a futures contract unless the market price for the commodity has been set. Yatsa hashar poskim va'afal pi she'en lezeh yesh lezeh. And once the market price is set, then you can make such a deal, because even though this guy doesn't have the commodity right now, he could find, since the market price is set, he could find that commodity from somebody else at this moment in time. Therefore, he has the potential to pay back the same amount of wheat as was purchased. And if the market rises in the future, not only is that not interest, it's not even avak ribit. It's not even the residue of ribit, since the guy could have paid off the wheat at that moment. Now, the second possibility that allows you to make the deal is, even if the market price is not set, if the person who's taking the contract, that is the person who's being paid, actually has the goods, and therefore he could theoretically give over the amount based on the, it's not a market price, but it's the price that the two of them established that the commodity was worth. Since he actually has the goods on hand, even though he's not going to pay it back till later, therefore any increase in value that happens later is not considered rebate. And moreover that, the Mishnah makes it even more, it gives a little bit more latitude to the deal that you can make, as follows. So if the person taking the money, the person buying the contract, is the first of the harvesters, which means he actually has the grain, but the grain's not ripened yet. It's at the very beginning of the harvest. It's sitting in the granary, and it's waiting to ripen, which means the price will probably increase, or certainly may increase, by the time it's ripe. Nonetheless, since he has the goods on hand, and theoretically he can close the contract, therefore the deal is good to go. And the same goes with a number of other commodities that the Mishnah will mention. Va'al ha'avit shel anavim, va'al ha'ma'atan shel zeitim, va'al ha'beitim shel yotzer, v'al ha'sid mishishako b'kivshan. So you can set the price for wine, you can create you can agree on a price between two people for a contract of wine if the grapes are already stored in a avit, some large container, which is where they wait around waiting to be pressed. To be stepped on, actually. You could do the same thing with olive oil. If the guy actually has olives not in an oil status, and not even in a ripe status, but waiting around in a big ma'atan waiting to enter a status where you could press them into olive oil. Or on utensils, if the bait sit, as you could set a price on utensils of clay or some sort of earthenware, if the bait sim, which here are not eggs, but there's some kind of bowls or scrunches of mortar are in the process of being fired up. So since they're in the process of being fired up, even though the utensils are not ready to go until the firing is finished and the guy shapes it, nonetheless you can establish a contract right away. Even though there's no market price. And that's true also for shako b'kivshan, which is lime, which they use, I think, for whitewashing things and for making things watertight back in the old days. So if it was made out of rock that you would put into a kiln, then it would melt down. So as long as you had the rock cooking, even though the lime was not ready to go, the deal could be made. And finally, posek imo ala zebel kol yimot hashana. So according to the Tanakhama, when it comes to compost, fertilizer, then you can make that deal any time of the year, even if the guy doesn't have the fertilizer on him, because according to the Tanakhama, you could always find fertilizer or compost or, you know what I mean, lying around somewhere. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Ein poskim ala zevel, elim kein haitalo zevel ba'ashba. Rabbi Yossi disagrees and says you should not, if the market value is not already set, you cannot establish a price and create a futures market for compost unless the person actually has the compost ready to go in its finished state. And the Chachamim Matirim, and since the Chachamim are the third opinion, and the first opinion was you could do it any time, and Rabbi Yossi's opinion is you can never do it unless the compost is actually in the container ready to go. So the Chachamim, what the Chachamim mean is that if it's the summer, then you don't have to have the compost in hand. Why? Because compost essentially takes the whole winter with the slush and the liquid and all the moisture, and it takes a while to essentially rot and achieve its fertilizer state. So in the summer, he agrees with Tanna Kamma that says you don't have to have the compost in hand because anybody during the summer can find plenty of fertilizer. But he agrees with Rabbi Yossi during the winter, since in the winter the compost is not composted yet, whatever material that makes good fertilizer is not turned into that good material, and therefore you cannot make the deal if you do not actually have the compost in hand. Now this is not talking about the compost or anything else. This is going back to the very beginning issue of when there is a market value and you are normally allowed, whether the guy has the items or not, if the market has already decided that, let's say, wine is $50 a barrel, so you can now pay for a futures contract on wine, because even if that guy doesn't have it, he could run right now and get it since the market price is established. However, even better than that, according to the Tanna Kamma, posek imo kishara gavoa, you can establish a price based on the high value. And now, high value doesn't mean high price. It means high amount of goods in the market, right? Supply and demand. When you have high supply, the price goes down. So let's say right now wine is worth $50 a barrel. But it's the very early season, and you know that the price may go down to $40 a barrel once the wineries all start producing their stuff. So you could say to the guy that you're buying a contract from, you could say, listen, here's $100, you're going to supply me with $100 of wine. However, if wine goes, that is, you're going to supply me 2 barrels of wine at $50 a barrel. However, if wine goes down to $40 a barrel, then you give me back my $20, and I'll take the $80 worth of wine, the 2 barrels of wine. I want the lower price. Or I guess you could do it the other way. You could take 2 barrels plus, I guess, 20% over the top. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Afal pi shelo pasaki mo kishara kavoa, yachol omar tein li kazeh o tein li maoti. Rabbi Yehuda actually takes it a step further and says you don't even have to stipulate the price. The assumption is when you're making a futures contract with somebody that should the price go down because the market volume of the commodity goes up, so the person can demand it back. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Afal pi shelo pasaki mo kishara gavoa, even though he did not establish that when the market gets flooded, he wants the lower price. You could say, Tainli kazeh, give me it at the lower price, or Tainli maoti, or give me my money back. We do not follow Rabbi Yehuda, we follow Tanna Kamma, which means that if you want that lower market price, conditionally, you must state it, and obviously the person who's buying the contract must agree to it. And now Mishnah 8. And in order to understand the first part of Mishnah 8, we need to mention something that only comes up in the next Mishnah. And it seems a little bit strange, but this is the way it works. Just like you can't give somebody $100 and expect it to get back $120, because that's rebate, that's interest on the Torah, you can't loan somebody a commodity for the later return of the same quantity of that commodity. So I can't take $100, I can't take a barrel of wine and give it to you on the stipulation that in a month you're going to give me back the barrel of wine, a full barrel of wine. And the reason why that's true is because prices generally go up. And if the price goes up, that means that by you giving me back the same amount of wine, not the same dollar amount, but the same quantity, the same volume of the commodity, that means you're going to be out money. I'll have given you $100 worth of something, and you'll have returned something which is worth $110. Now, it's not interest from the Torah, but it is avak, or residue of interest, and the rabbis say that you can't do it. Now, based on this principle, which we'll detail more in the next Mishnah, the Mishnah says as follows, Malva adam et arisav chitim b'chitin lizera, aval lo le'echol. A person who owns land can loan wheat to his sharecropper. A sharecropper is when somebody works for your land, not for a stipulated amount of money, but for a percentage of the amount that he manages to grow on your property. Sharecropper, he takes a share of the total produce that he manages to get out of your property. Now, you are allowed to loan your sharecropper a certain amount of wheat, and you're going to get that wheat back, but only if the goal of the wheat is not for him to eat, which is verboten for reasons that we explained just above, but he's going to take that wheat and sow it right into the ground. And that's because it's not a loan that you're going to then get back at a later time, because the guy doesn't want to eat it. It's part of the deal that the landowner is making with the sharecropper. He's saying, listen, you're supposed to give me back 10% of the goods. I'm giving you this amount of wheat, and you have to understand that that wheat's going to come off of the amount that you're going to be giving me back, or it's going to be tacked on to the amount you're giving back. So instead of 10%, it's going to be 10% plus a little bit, where you're going to get back a little bit less than 10% of the amount. So since it's part of the overall sharecropping deal, so therefore it is okay, since it's not really a loan as much as a leverage of a certain commodity to use for the sharecropping, which will be then removed from the overall price of the sharecropping deal. The Gemara explains that the details actually differ based on whether you live in a place where the sharecropper generally uses his own wheat to sow, or whether the expectation is that the landowner supplies the seed, but for right now we'll leave that alone. Now, the reason why this law is kind of pre-introduced is to explain something Rabbi Gamliel used to do when it came to markets and changing markets, to avoid any possibility of not only rebate and not only avak rebate, but anything that comes even close. Shahaya Rabbi Gamliel malved darisav chitin b'chitin lezera biyoker b'huzalu ovizol v'hukaru notel mehan kishar hazol. So he would loan wheat for sowing to his, so that his sharecroppers could use it to sow the field, so that they could start, you know, raising crops on the field. Now, whether the price of grain was high, biyokar, when he gave it to them, and then behuzlu, and when it went down, or whether when he gave it to them it was bezol, vihukru, and the market for that amount of wheat went up, notel mehem kishar azol, he always took the cheaper amount. And what that means is as follows. If wheat was at 100, let's say I'm going to take large numbers which are easy to divide so you can see what's going on. I doubt markets would really fluctuate this much, but it should make this situation clear. Let's say Rabbi Gamliel gave a barrel of wheat to his sharecropper so the sharecropper could sow the land that he was sharecropping. And it was $100 for a barrel. And then by the end of the season, when the guy was giving his back his share, then it was only worth $10. Wheat was worth $10 a barrel because there's plenty of wheat in the market. They would only have to pay him back the same quantity of wheat. They wouldn't have to pay him back $100. They would pay him back the same quantity, let's say one barrel, which means that they're only out $10, which means at the very beginning they received a $100 barrel of wheat. At the very end they're paying back the same size barrel, which is only $10. So they actually make a $90 profit, and that was fine with Rabbi Gamliel. But if he loaned them wheat at $10 a barrel, and then the market went up to $100 worth a barrel, which could happen if there's like a wheat disease and everybody's wheat gets wiped out and the commodity really skyrockets up, then instead of having them pay back the entire volume, they would only pay back the amount that was equal to the $10 when the barrel was only worth $10. So in this case, since it went from $10 a barrel when he gave it to him to $100 a barrel when they had to return the barrel, he would only ask for them for 1/10 of the volume and only 1/10 of the barrel, which would be equal to the $10. And not because this is the halakha, because as we mentioned at the beginning of the Mishnah, this is not a case for where you give somebody a loan to use a commodity and he has to return it to you, which is not allowed. This is part of the transaction. I give you a barrel of wheat, you have to pay me back a barrel of wheat. It's part of the sharecropping. However, if Gamliel wanted to be lahachmir, that's why he really wanted to be careful on himself, never to possibly leverage himself or cause people that were taking something from him to have to pay back more or to get hurt in the transaction. Therefore, he made sure always to take the lesser amount. Go Rabbi Gamliel.